All right. A happy week three in the National Football League, everybody. This is the Free Stretch Podcast. I am Bobby Fenton, coming to you live once again from the passenger seat of my wife's 2010 Ford Edge in my garage, which has kind of become a home for me in recording this thing. And I want to thank all of you for joining me. I want to thank all of you for being patient. A little bit of a late release this week as some things got backed up here at One Game Day Place. But we are live, we are hot, we are ready to go. We've got lots to get to today as we get set for week three, the second Buccaneers game, as they come off a 29-7 win over the Chicago Bears. And you know, that already is now a few days in the past, but I just want to touch on the game real quick from week two and the season opener for the Bucs. Obviously, great to get a win like that. Great for the Bucs to go out and leave very few negative impressions. I mean, for a first game, albeit against a Bears team that isn't supposed to be very good, with a quarterback who's not supposed to be very good. You know, they did what they're supposed to do. If you're a team who hopes to be one of the upper echelon teams in the NFL, but still, like, they came out of that game, and it wasn't just the offense. In fact, the offense I'll get to today actually left some things to be desired and has me a little bit concerned. But defensively, which is one of the things we were worried about, not maybe necessarily worried about, but one of the things that maybe wasn't considered the biggest strength of the team, did a great job in keeping the Bears shut down. I know it's Mike Glennon. I know that. And I know that, again, you're supposed to do what they did on Sunday, but they did it and almost had the shutout there until very late in the game when the Bears were able to scrape one across. But a very good thing to see in your first game, no matter who the opponent is, when you come out after the game and you kind of shrug and you go, because we always find things, you know, as fans, analysts, whatever you want to call it, even in the best of games, usually you're like, oh, well, this, that, and the other. And there's a few things for sure, but for the most part, after the game Sunday, I was like, okay, week two, let's go. Now, what the Buccaneers didn't do, and again, something I'm a little bit concerned about just because it's not the first time and it's a trend, still didn't finish drives the way you want to. Still too many field goals. They scored 29 points, should have been 30 off a missed extra point by Nick Folk. And by the way, if Roberto Aguayo misses that extra point and not Nick Folk, it's a huge, oh my God, we're all freaking out and everything. And I'm not, I'm just saying, you know, the standard there was a little bit different. But anyway, three touchdowns, three field goals. Now, you got to look at the touchdowns. One was the pick six, obviously. And two more were set up on short fields by turnovers. Those were the only Bucs touchdowns. Either the pick six, one they started, I think, at like the Bears 15 or something, was it? On the muffed punt return. Which, what in the hell was that guy doing, by the way? I love, by the way, aggressive moves, whether it's football, baseball, guys going for an extra base. I mean, I always like that. I want guys to try and make plays. And punt returners, too. Hey, don't be afraid to scoop that ball up, even if a guy's kind of hanging around. Get in there. I'm usually for that. But he literally had to elbow his way in between multiple Buccaneers just to get a look at the ball. And it really, like, no matter how many times you watch sports, makes you wonder. I mean, I've been watching sports for a long time. I'm sure most of you all have, too. And the highest of the high levels, the NFL, and there's still guys doing stuff that high schoolers do. I cannot understand it. But anyway, that set up a touchdown, one play to Mike Evans, which was great. They had the other one, which I think was not quite the red zone, but somewhere around the 35-ish yard line they got set up. Scored on that one, scored on the pick six. So that's great. I mean, you want to be able to have an offense that makes people pay for their transgressions like that. So that was wonderful. But on the Bucs' longer drives, the ones that weren't set up by turnovers, and the Bucs did a great job getting down the field, settled for field goals those times. They didn't finish any long drives. They didn't score any touchdowns that weren't set up by short fields by the Bears. And that is not new. I mean, that was something that last year, for as much improvement as Jameis Winston has shown and things like that, this team in the red zone, for whatever reason, seems to have some issues there. And I was a little bit concerned about that because, you know, against the Bears, it didn't matter, obviously. But if you listen to the podcast last week, what we talked about was how crucial in a game like professional football or college football, where there aren't that many games, where playoff spots are almost always decided by tiebreakers, where the difference between 11 and 5 and 8 and 8 or 9 and 7 is almost nothing, these four-point plays, I call them, or four-point series, where you're inside the 20, these red zone series, that's 4 points on the line every time. Maybe 7 if you miss the field goal, but at least 4, the difference between 3 and 7. And your failure to score a touchdown down there, even in some random part of some random game early in the season, and maybe you win or lose a game because of it, and you don't always realize it at the time, and your whole season rides on that stuff. I mean, red zone offense is something that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the good teams do it. You know, this isn't the 1999 Bucks or the 2002 Bucks, and the defense did great, but they're not going to win the game 16-7 or 16-10 or something like, you know, you got to score touchdowns. And the Bucks offense, again, did that a couple times with short fields, did not do that against Chicago with some drives that were good drives all the way in there and then it didn't finish off. So that's a little bit of a concern of mine. Something that, looking forward, we'll keep an eye on against Minnesota going up there this week. You've got a Minnesota team who, still, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be, whether it's Case Keenum or whether it's Sam Bradford, remains to be seen. I'm not totally sure how much it matters, to be honest with you. But I was surprised, and not to get too much into gambling, at least not yet. Believe me, we will at some point. But just looking at the spreads for the week, I always kind of do that earlier in the week and just check things out looking ahead. I know the Bucks are going on the road, and I understand that, you know, a lot of times teams coming off a big win don't play as well, and teams coming off a loss, like Minnesota is, play better. So a few things kind of line up, but still surprised this game. I mean, I've seen the line anywhere from a pick 'em to Minnesota -2, Bucks, you know, -1, right in there. Pretty much a pick 'em, give or take a couple of points. And I would have guessed before seeing the lines this week, just saying, hey, guess that line, which we used to play on my radio show every week, I would have the Bucks at -3, -4, somewhere in there. And I'm not going to, I try not to ever bet on Bucks games ever because I don't, even betting on them, I don't like what comes with it. It just confuses things. I like to just focus, be a fan, watch the game, enjoy myself. But, I mean, any team, I mean, the first thing you look at is the quarterback. Any team that comes in without a quarterback that scares you, I feel like the Bucks have a hell of a chance to beat. What's one of the first things you do every time you look at a matchup? Look at the quarterbacks. They're not on the field against each other at the same time, but you still, you look at the quarterbacks, Jameis Winston, Case Keenum, or Sam Bradford. And again, I'm not even sure how much it matters, but if it ends up being Keenum, all the better. Not that I want anything to be wrong with Sam Bradford, but you get my point. So, a big opportunity here for the Bucs as they go up. Gerald McCoy was back on the practice field today, not yet from Quan Alexander, although he's still questionable. And again, this is all as of my recording. This stuff could change, but that is what we're looking at. But as far as the game atmosphere, this is what I want. A few people tweeted at me this week. A few people emailed me because I was unable to attend this one. And I will be going to more Bucks games this year, but I couldn't go this past Sunday. So I actually, funny story, I had to, because I do some work at the Rays games on the television side of things. And I was actually stuck in a TV truck during the Bucks game on Sunday. Was able to watch it, thankfully. Got everything set up, had it on, but didn't get the full effect of the crowd and how everything was with that. And from everything I heard, I know the Bucks have done things to limit the number of Bears fans and all that stuff. It seemed like a pretty good atmosphere. Sunday at 1 o'clock in September is always tough. And believe me, I used to go, I mean, I told you this on one of the previous podcasts. I used to attend every single game, preseason and regular season, no matter what. I did it for over a decade straight. I think the number ended up, when the streak finally got broken, was like 116 straight games at Raymond James Stadium. I mean, I've been there and done all that. Now I've got a couple small kids. It's a little bit tougher. I took my kid to his first game last year as a five-year-old, and it was incredible. Had a great time, you know, getting to do that with him for the first time. It was against the Saints game last year, which the Bucks have won. We'll do it again this year, but it's not the same as it was when I was in my 20s. Where I just, you know, I could do whatever I wanted and I'd go to every game. It's not like that now. Although I will be there again. But from everything I heard, of course, the stick carriers, you know, Justin, who I always enjoy his podcast and getting the chance to listen to him. He sounded like he had a great experience, and everybody had a great experience this Sunday. You know, I remember when Raymond James Stadium first got built, and it opened in 1998, and the Bucks actually, in 1998, missed the playoffs. They went 8-8 the year after they had made the playoffs for the first time. And yet Raymond James Stadium was a really tough place for teams to come into. I think the Bucks' home record that year, despite being just 8-8, was, I have to look it up. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it was something like 6-2. And even going into 99 and through there, those first few years, you didn't come into Raymond James Stadium and win. And then, of course, we went through a long period post-Super Bowl, really up until the past, well, up until very recently, where it didn't matter where the games were played. And with Raymond James Stadium, and I, you know, some of you all can give me your opinions if you want to email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, or tweet at me, @bobbygameday. You know, I look back at my childhood. In fact, I'm looking at a picture of it right now sitting in my garage. It's a big, wide panoramic shot of the big sombrero taken in like 1992 or something like that, and it hangs in my garage. I've had it since college. It's been everywhere I've ever lived. You know, that's my Mecca. If a genie and a bottle showed up right next to me right now and I could have three wishes, I think the first, maybe the second one would be, let me go back in time one more time and go to a big game at the Big Sombrero. You know, one of those games in 1997 that we remember so well, the final game, the playoff game against the Lions, that Sunday nighter against the Miami Dolphins I remember very well. Remember the Green Bay game that year, which the Bucks didn't win? You know, the first game of the year that year against San Francisco. Just give me one more chance to do that again, somehow, some sort of fantasy. That would be one of my wishes. So that's where I'm coming from. And then Raymond James was built, and obviously it doesn't, or didn't at the time, have all that history. Although now, I mean, it kind of blows my mind when I think about this. Raymond James Stadium is going to be 20 years old next year, which is just, my God. I mean, they've been at the Raymond James Stadium longer than they were in my lifetime at the Sombrero. They were there a few years before I was born, obviously, as well. But they're coming up on a few more seasons here. They'll have been at Raymond James longer than they were at the Sombrero, which blows my mind. And I've always thought this about Raymond James Stadium. From a purely facility standpoint, as far as comfort, bells and whistles, amenities, all those things, it's great. And people that come in here, whether it's national media, you know, people with the league, I mean, we got another Super Bowl coming. They've had two there already. Raymond James is fantastic. And now they've redone the scoreboards and everything like they should have done a while ago. And all that is on point, no question about it. It's kind of cookie cutter, though. I even to this day, even though they've been there, again, almost two decades now, almost longer than they were at Tampa Stadium. It just, I wish they had architecturally done some things a little bit different. It's a very open stadium, so noise doesn't really get trapped in any way. I do wish they had done something with shade like they have in South Florida now, and they had to renovate Dolphin Stadium for it to be that way, or Hard Rock Stadium, whatever it is now. But something like that, or Seattle to me, and I've been to Seattle Stadium. I mean, that's what we should have had here. We should have done something like that. And we weren't that many years ahead of them. I guess we were kind of at the tail end of that cookie-cutter thing. I know Tennessee Stadium is almost identical to the Bucks. It's got a couple different curves. But, you know, Raymond James Stadium, as far as the stadium itself, isn't going to generate much atmosphere. The fans have to do it. You can go to Seattle, and Seattle's got great fans. I'm not knocking Seattle's fans. But you go to Seattle, and it's going to be loud there just by the very nature of the place. And some other places are like that, too. Raymond James, again, very wide open, perfectly symmetrical, kind of angular and rigid. I wish at the very least, I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but if you don't like tangents, this podcast is probably not going to be for you, because I do tangents sometimes. And it's a podcast, we're just talking. I really wish they'd paid homage to the old stadium with the new stadium. Like, why couldn't they have built a little curve in there, a little, you know, the middle part would go up the highest, and then in the corners it would dip the lowest. Which, if you ever see a stadium, any stadium, this is what I loved about Tampa Stadium. If you ever see a stadium that's not that full and people can kind of just sit wherever they want, They make a natural sombrero shape. Like, people right in the middle on the 50-yard line are willing to sit higher. So you'll see, like, that arc, like, toward the middle, it'll go higher and higher because people will sit there no matter how high it is. Then towards the end, people aren't going to do that unless they get really close, because at least then you're close. So it'll start sloping back down. Same thing in the end zone. Dead red in the end zone. In the middle, it goes up a little bit higher, and then in the corners, lower again. It naturally, people do that. That's without even building it that way. And Raymond James Stadium, or excuse me, Tampa Stadium, was built that way. The Liberty Bowl in Memphis is also built that way, by the way. It's one of the only two, really, that Arrowhead's kind of like that, too, a little bit. But I wish we had just done something like that with Raymond James, built it with a little bit of that gentle sloping upward toward the middle, then back down toward the corner. They could have done that without really messing anything else. They didn't put a lot of imagination into Raymond James Stadium. And the pirate ship, which I remember at the time when they announced they were going to have a pirate ship, I thought it was the single stupidest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I was like, are you kidding me with this gimmicky garbage? This is an embarrassment. It's going to be like Disney World and this Pirates of the Caribbean stuff. I hated it. And now that we've had the stadium for as long as we have, I mean, without that ship, it'd be really generic. Like, I'm glad we have the ship. Although I would be interested to hear from people, because I talked to a couple people that were there. I know the cannons weren't working this week. I know my good friend Roy Cummings with Florida Football Insiders, formerly of the Tampa Tribune, said it was great not having the cannons. I'm sure a lot of other people would say, no, come on, you gotta have the cannons. But I would have been interested to have been there for a lot of reasons, but definitely because of that, because I always would have wondered what a game would be like without the cannons. Because I'll be honest, I mean, again, I told you, been to 100 and whatever games in a row. Over the years, been probably over 150 total games there. Every single time I've ever been to a Bucs game at Raymond James Stadium, every time, I mean literally every time, the first time they shot off the cannons, it scared the hell out of me. I'm never ready for it. And I used to not just go to the games, but you know the railing in each end zone that you can stand on? Because I don't like to sit in a seat, I like to stand up. And my seats, I'd always get season tickets in the cheapest section in the upper deck, and I wanted to be down close, so I would just go down, and I'd watch the whole game from the rail down there. And I could usually get right on the rail, or maybe a body or two back from it. But I was always able to see the field. And so we'd be, like, literally right under the cannons. And, of course, I don't know if it's possible how they rig them up or whatever, but if they were just two-thirds as loud as they actually are, that would be, I think, more of an ideal. They really are too loud. Like, you could be 500 yards away on the other side of the stadium or even outside the stadium, and they shoot off, and I jump every time. I mean, every time. So they didn't have them this past Sunday. Maybe you like that. Maybe you missed them. We'll see when they come back. But this week being on the road, you know, they've got time to get everything straightened out. But from everything I heard, the Bears fans weren't too big of an issue. Of course, they're not that good either. And quite honestly, having grown up here, you get so used to that stuff. I mean, so many games as a kid, whether it was the Packers or whether it was the Bears, you know, the rare game against the Steelers, which thankfully we don't face them here that often because those are the most annoying. The Pittsburgh fans are the most annoying of all of them to me. Just because there's so many of them that apparently love Pittsburgh so much, and yet nobody lives there. They're all there. It's not just us. Every stadium around the country, oh, Pittsburgh Steeler Nation, they're all there. What the hell? Do any of you actually live in Pittsburgh? Like, does any Pittsburgh fan still live in Pittsburgh? I think even the fans that go to home games there come from out of town. But whether it's them, Packers, Bears, you know, all the usual suspects. I mean, you get so used to that. Rays games, it was Yankees and Red Sox. And even as a little kid, you know, I remember that, especially with the Packers, because up until that 97 season at the Sombrero when the Bucs finally got good, and even then too, that was all you heard. It never bothered me that much, but I'll say this. I know the Bucs did this thing, and Dirk Cutter's even talked about it. You know, we want our colors only on the lower level. I don't know why just lower level. But a full stadium is better than a not full stadium, no matter who the fans are, first of all. So, I know we had a decent crowd. It wasn't quite a sellout. It was a decent crowd this past Sunday. It doesn't bother me that much. I'd rather be at a game with everybody there than sparsely attended. And this one was not sparsely attended, but from what I heard, it was mostly Bucs fans and you know, things are looking up. And again, all this stuff, it comes, it goes. I guarantee you, if the Buccaneers in November are something like 8-4, playing a big home game on Sunday, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And people talk about all these things that are different now, and, oh, it's not the same. You know, there's smartphones, and there's HD and all this. And yes, that is true, but it's also irrelevant. If the Bucs are in the play, not just in the playoff hunt, in the divisional hunt, like really good in December and November, it'll be fine. And if they're not, it won't be. And it won't have anything to do with cell phones. It won't have anything to do with HD TVs. It won't have anything to do with, you know, politics too playing too much of a role. It won't have anything to do with any of that. It has to do with stakes. How big is this game? What is at stake? The higher the stakes, the more people are there. Plus, the higher the stakes, the cooler it is. It's not even just about the games. It's about how cool is it that I'm going to this game? Like, can you just tell, hey, I'm going to the Bucs game? Just telling other people that? I mean, that's a big deal. Seriously, that's why one of the biggest reasons the Rays don't do well. It's not cool. Oh, hey, I got tickets to the Rays game tonight. Remember the Bucs in the late 90s, early 2000s? How cool it was? How cool you felt? Oh, yeah, I got tickets. I'm going, man. Or the day after the game. Oh, yeah, I was there a lot. Yeah, we went. Yeah, we went. It was cool, and it hasn't been like that. Other people that didn't go haven't felt jealous of people that went in many years. And you all know that feeling, maybe from both sides, where you're like, man, I wish I was there. I should have been there. Or, yeah, you know, even if they won, I'm pretty good that I wasn't there. It doesn't bother me. That's a big factor. And week one, September, 1 o'clock, not quite there yet, even with a great win, but you watch as this season goes and goes and goes. As we get closer, you'll see. It will get to be where if the Bucs are, again, 8-5, 9-4, somewhere in there in those final, you know, month and a half of the season, it's going to be a sight to behold. And I really am looking forward to it. One, I love it when the Bucs play those games in the late fall, when it gets dark a little earlier. Especially, we don't have any 4 o'clock kickoffs late in the year right now, which is disappointing. Hopefully we'll get, you know, they flex games and stuff. But is there anything better than, like, you know, right around Thanksgiving or early December, you know, week 13, week 14, somewhere in there, 4 o'clock kickoff, dark by the middle second quarter, big game. That's what I love. I mean, I love all the weeks, believe me. Football season's not long enough to start tossing weeks aside. But I'm really looking forward to that. And I won't have to be working any more Rays games during Buck games now that this stuff is over. So, again, they play Minnesota this weekend. We'll be looking forward to that, and it'll be nice to camp out in front of the HD TV for that one, unless anybody's making the trip. I know there's always a few. One of the weird things, even though Tampa teams don't do great with attendance necessarily all the time, it always seems like on the road there's some fans. You see Rays fans at these road games. You see Bucks fans at these road games. I know people going to Buffalo this year. I was planning on going to Miami till it got moved. I'm still going to try and go now that it's in. It's probably going to be better now that it's going to be later in the season instead of a 1 o'clock kickoff in September in South Florida. Although they got shade there. But I'll bet you there'll be a decent, and not like thousands or anything, but there'll be a few Bucks fans up there in Minnesota. Buck Nation, don't sleep on it. So I wanted to talk about a couple other things tonight because the news came out today, and I'm not going to do a whole head injury thing. It's been done to death, but I just wanted to say my piece on it real quick because I haven't addressed it on the podcast before about Aaron Hernandez's lawyer saying he had CTE and that's what caused all this. First of all, let's say this real quick. Aaron Hernandez, his lawyer is saying this right now. It hasn't actually come out from an independent medical report that he had anything wrong with his head. And I've already seen the articles popping up today, or the past day or two now. Oh, this is bad for the NFL. Here we go. This is going to be a big problem. Well, maybe. I want to see an actual report that says, yes, this is what he had. Not his lawyer, which, I mean, how predictable was it that his lawyer was going to come out and say something like this after the fact? He couldn't say it when he was alive, because who knows? But, you know, now, oh yeah, he had CTE. See, that's what it all was. And it might be true. I'm not downplaying that. It might be true. But the point I'm trying to get to is this. Another thing I was watching last week, I don't know if anybody saw the 30 for 30 on ESPN. They did the one about the scabs during the strike season. Remember when, I remember this as a young kid, but when the players went on strike, but instead of just being on strike, which is what we've had lockout strikes, baseball did it in 94, hockey's done it a couple times, the NBA was on one for a little while, and those were strikes, or excuse me, those were lockouts for the most part. There's been a couple strikes too. The NFL players, when they went on strike, though, they still played the games with other guys, crossing the picket line, as they say, scabs, replacement players, and it wasn't one of the, like, epic 30 for 30s we're used to, but it was interesting, especially because I remember it from being a kid, but I didn't remember all the details, but there was a lot of backlash I remember then, and people even on Twitter now, and listening to some of the old school media guys that were there for that, saying, who do these guys think they are? They were complaining because nobody respected them and stuff. You're crossing the picket line. What do you want, dude? You know, who? Screw you. Let me tell you something right now. And I don't know how you feel, but you can think about this. And I put it into action. I don't just say it because I play football, even right now, for the Dunedin Pirates of the Florida Football Alliance. And if you want to play too, check out DunedinPirates.com. And I'm talking about real football, helmets, pads, everything. Semi-pro football. It's there for you. These leagues exist. And I play at 37. And I pay money to play. All right? So listen, all this stuff, CTE, head injuries, this, that, and the other. Let me tell you something right now. If there was a strike right now, if it happened today, and you were blessed with the ability to be one of those people who could cross the picket line and go play, ask yourself this right now. Just a hypothetical. Forget about what kind of shape you're in or you know how old you are. Hypothetically, if you were in your late 20s, let's say, and in good shape and skilled enough to where you were able to be one of these replacement players, would you say no? Because I'll tell you right now, and I consider myself a principled guy. I consider myself someone who thinks of others and tries to see things from their perspective. I would feel bad about crossing the picket line and undermining maybe the players or... Honestly, though, it wouldn't matter how I felt. My ass would be on the 50-yard line of that stadium with a uniform faster than you could say Jack Robinson. I mean, it would take me less than a millisecond to cross the picket line, knowing what we know about all this other stuff. If you said, hey, Bobby, we need a wideout and special teams guy for the Bucs this week. They're on strike. You want to do it? We're going to Detroit. We're going to fly to Detroit and play. Are you kidding? I mean, it would take me, again, less than a nanosecond to say yes to that. And for free, I would do it. They would have to pay me. I would do it for free. I mean, forget about the strike, just in general. Like, what have I told you right now? You know, you hear about all these guys' contracts, head injuries. This guy retired at 22 because even though he had a contract on the table, he didn't think it was worth it. If you told me right now, I could play a full season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or any NFL team. And I wasn't going to get paid the minimum, not even the money. I was going to get paid, let's say, $35,000 for the season. That's it. Just like a regular ham and egg or average Joe salary, whatever. And you're going to be on the team, on the 53-man. You're going to be active for every game. You're going to play in the game. I mean, I wouldn't even hesitate. I mean, I would pay them $35,000 a year to let me play in one game. And like I said, I play in a semi-pro league that nobody watches the games or anything like that. Although you can, and we're hoping to have more people this year, but it's not like big crowds. There's no health insurance. I mean, we're on our own for if I break my leg or something, I got to go take care of that myself. Any head injury stuff or all that, any you're worried, well, hey, again, that's all on you. And I pay them the league fees, and I enjoy the hell out of it. I'm doing it again then. Again, if anybody wants to play, you can be my teammate right now, DunedinPirates.com, or just email me at BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Our head coach is Ernest Givens, by the way, used to play wide receiver for the Oilers. You might remember him. So if I do that, obviously, I'd go. But think about it for yourself. Would you do it? For all the stuff we know, for all the stuff that's been in the news, for all the stuff that's going to continue to be in the news, CTE, concussions, this, that, and the other, all the things that we supposedly know now, would it actually change anything if you had a chance to do that? And I get it from a professional player standpoint, because, you know, banging your head against the wall for 15 years or going back to college, that's one thing. But one season right now, hey, Bobby, come play for the Bucks, $35K a year. Even nothing, free if you want. I'd be like, I mean, I would drop whatever the hell I was doing. I would drop kick it off the side of a cliff, and my ass would be over at $1 right now. Hey, what size helmets you got? What, should I get a large? Should I get a medium? What do you think? That it wouldn't even be close. And that actually goes for even, you know, any league, really. And maybe I'm crazy. Maybe some of you are thinking, I wouldn't, even for the millions, I'd probably have to think about it. And that's fine. That's a perfectly valid opinion. But those scabs and looking back at it and thinking of that 30 for 30 made me think of this, watching people talk about those guys. And I know that that's kind of a taboo thing. Oh, this guy crossed the picket line. This guy's a weasel. This guy's undermining his supposed brothers. Hell with that. Again, no hard feelings, man. Nothing personal. You strike, I'll go out there and do it. I won't even wait. I'm serious about playing. If any of you all listening to this right now, you want to play actual football, get in touch with me. Or just go to DunedinPirates.com. We're starting practice here soon. It's one of those spring seasons, played January through like April. One practice a week. Games on Saturday evenings. We play at Dunedin High School. It is a blast, okay? I played high. I didn't play in college or anything. I was just a regular schmuck in high school, at Jesuit High School in the late 90s. Went to UF just as a regular student. You know, we didn't play football. And then a few years later, I played in a semi-pro league, like, in the early 2000s. Took, like, 15 years off. And then last year, I said, yeah, I want to do this again. And, I again, it's the most fun I've had yet. Now, I didn't get hurt, luckily, or anything like that. And that could always happen, but think about it if you want to do it. If not, I understand. But either way, that's all for the spring. Right now it's the fall, and we've got the Buccaneers to take care of. So I want to again thank the Joes over at Joe Bucks Fan. A little bit late. Sorry about posting this late. We're going to normally be getting this up on Thursday afternoons, but this week had some things back us up. But thanks to them. Thanks to all of you for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Bobby Game Day. Email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. This is the Free Stretch Podcast number 3. And we should be up on iTunes coming up soon, so it's easier to find everything. But you can always see it linked at JoeBucksFan.com. In the meantime, as we get set for Bucks Vikings, enjoy the week, enjoy your weekend, be safe, and go Bucks. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's the Free Stretch for week 3 in the National Football League.